Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, two big Super Tuesday winners are leading the charge to the White House. Scientists are examining space travelers for long-term health effects. And the multi-talented Gwen Stefani has a new song climbing the charts.
Her new album, which is coming out March 18th, and it's called This Is What the Truth Feels Like, was inspired by all of these personal events in her life in the last year.
It's right here on the Voice of America. New York businessman Donald Trump and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have emerged as the big winners in presidential primary election contests in several U.S. states on so-called Super Tuesday. It is part of the process that selects delegates to the Republican and Democratic Party nominating conventions in July before the general campaign leading to the November 8th presidential election. Both Trump and Clinton took at least 7 of the 11 contests, making them the clear frontrunners in their respective parties. Clinton, speaking in Miami, Florida, after her victories, turned her attention from the challenge posed by rival Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders to her likely Republican opponent, Trump, whose theme has been making America great again.
And we know we've got work to do. But that work is not to make America great again. America never stopped being great. We have to make America whole. We have to fill in what's been hollowed out. Now, it's clear tonight that the stakes in this election have never been higher. And the rhetoric we're hearing on the other side has never been lower. Trying to divide America between us and them is wrong, and we're not going to let it work.
Meanwhile, Trump, instead of a post-election victory rally, held a Palm Beach, Florida news conference following what he called an amazing night of victory, and returned to his familiar campaign theme.
We're going to make America great again, folks. We're going to make it great again. And, you know, I watched Hillary's speech, and she's talking about wages have been poor, and everything's doing badly, but we're going to make it. She's been there for so long. I mean, if she hasn't straightened it out by now, she's not going to straighten it out in the next 4 years. It's just going to become worse and worse. She wants to make America whole again, and I'm trying to figure out what is that all about. Make America great again is going to be much better than making America whole again. I mean, our nation is in serious trouble. We're being killed on trade, absolutely destroyed. China is just taking advantage of us. I have nothing against China. I have great respect for China, but their leaders are too smart for our leaders. Our leaders don't have a clue. And the trade deficits at $400 billion and $500 billion are too much. No country can sustain that kind of trade deficit.
To take a look at the big picture of Super Tuesday, we are joined on the line by VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone. Thanks for speaking with us, Jim, after a late night for you.
Okay, Susan.
Say, what does all this mean?
Well, I think the general point is that both Clinton and Trump are in the driver's seat, particularly Clinton in the sense that she continues to win overwhelming support, 80%, and according to most of the polls, the exit polls, from African-American voters in these Democratic primaries and caucuses. That proved to be huge in the southern states. That's why she swept the southern states. Bernie Sanders picked off some smaller states. He does a little bit better in states where the white population is larger, where there aren't as many minorities, and in some of the smaller caucus states. So right now, she's on track to maintain a pretty commanding lead in the delegate count moving forward. And as you noted, she increasingly is going to be focusing her fire, I think, on particularly on Donald Trump on the Republican side. And as for the Republicans, well, yeah, Trump looks like he's in the driver's seat as well right now. It's going to be tough to stop. You know, there were a couple of setbacks for him last night. Ted Cruz won 3 states. Marco Rubio won his first in Minnesota. But for the most part, the Trump bandwagon rolls on. And this is now we're going to see, I think, the last gasp by the Republican establishment to see if they can stop him.
Well, where does the contest overall go from here?
Well, next week we have, I think, contests in Mississippi and in Michigan. Michigan is a big industrial state. You know, if Sanders can pull off some sort of surprise there, it could, you know, prolong the race on the Democratic side. You know, Michigan's a place where someone like John Kasich on the Republican side needs to have a bit of a breakthrough. Otherwise, you know, why is he still in the race? But I think all eyes are on March 15th, the primaries in 2 weeks, particularly Ohio and Florida, Kasich's home state, Marco Rubio's home state. Both of those states, by the way, are winner-take-all at that point. So that probably will be determinative in the Republican race, the last possible place where, you know, the people who want to stop Donald Trump will have an opportunity.
Well, so you don't think Super Tuesday is a goodbye song for some of these candidates?
I don't know. You know, Marco Rubio's got some soul-searching to do. He hopes to hang on desperately in, you know, for 2 weeks for his home state of Florida, but Donald Trump's been well ahead in the polls there. So Ted Cruz was trying to get people to drop out of the race last night after his victories, saying you really need to stop dividing the field and have one candidate go against Trump. But right now, when I'm not seeing any sign of that, I heard Ben Carson say he was staying in despite the fact he hasn't won any state. So if it goes on like it is, that's probably going to help Donald Trump.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jim, for speaking with us. I know you were up late last night. You need some more sleep, I think.
All right. Thank you, Susan.
Take care, Jim. Thank you. Well, joining me here in the studio right now is our social media reporter, Andrew Palchewski, who tells me there's been a lot going on with social media surrounding Super Tuesday. Welcome, Andrew, to the studio, as always.
Thank you for having me.
So what happened overnight?
Oh, lots of chatter among all the different supporters talking about their preferred candidate. So I'll go down the list quickly. We have the Clinton supporters saying, if it wasn't clear already that she's the front runner and that she's going to be the Democratic nominee, this is it. She leads the delegate count. She won seven states, and by fairly wide margins, 25, 30 points even, in big states like Texas, Massachusetts, Tennessee, Georgia, Virginia. So they're saying that she's the presumptive nominee. Bernie Sanders, this is evidence that he's done with. The Bernie Sanders supporters are saying, well, look at what we won. We won states that were kind of all over the map. Oklahoma, which is in this kind of south central United States, Minnesota, which is in the north central, Colorado's in the west, Virginia is in the east. Well, a couple of those, as Jim mentioned, were caucus states. Vermont is Bernie Sanders' home state, so there's questions about that. But they're saying, look, we can win all over the country, so this isn't over yet. Donald Trump, meanwhile, his supporters on social media are saying he's the front runner. 7 out of 11 states that he won by very big margins in some cases. A lot of people talking about Donald Trump last night. He went out, and rather than doing a victory celebration, he gave a press conference at his big estate in Palm Beach, Florida. And a lot of people on social media and a lot of his supporters saying he looked very presidential. It looked like a press conference from the East Room of the White House. So they're saying on social media that's his, you know, this is his big jump forward, his kind of ascension to the front runner status.
I was hearing that it was interesting concerning social media and Donald Trump in that he has actually not spent a fortune on the advertisements on television and things like that because he is doing so much social media and he believes that the social media is free. Why pay for the advertisement?
I am sure that at some point on the show we will be covering, you know, someone will write an article on how much Donald Trump's social media was worth in free advertising. Just when he tweets something out, it gets covered by the media. It goes out everywhere. I'm sure he's saved a lot of money as the businessman that he is.
Anything else?
Well, we have on the other side of the Republicans, Ted Cruz's supporter saying, look, he's picked up a few wins. Again, he won in his home state of Texas. And the Trump and Cruz supporters on social media, interestingly, even though they're opposed, are kind of teaming up and saying, okay, Marco Rubio, John Kasich, Ben Carson, you all need to drop out and clear the field. The Ted Cruz people want a one-on-one contest with Donald Trump. Donald Trump wants to try to clear the field, so they have different motives. But on social media, it's interesting. They're kind of banding together and saying, everybody else get out. But the Rubio people are still hanging on. They're saying, wait until Florida. We're going to win there. So
okay.
A lot of back and forth, a lot of Wednesday morning quarterbacking, as we say.
Okay, well, thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute. Researchers developing an ice-proof material are looking to the Humboldt penguin for inspiration. While Humboldt penguins live in a warmer climate, their habitat temperatures do drop below freezing in the winter. Despite cold and wet winter weather, the feathers of these animals manage to stay smooth and ice-free. The researchers say they found that the microstructure of Humboldt penguins' feathers is what keeps the ice off their bodies. Using a scanning electron microscope to study the feathers, the researchers found that along with waterproofing abilities, the microstructure was made up of a web of barbs and tiny interlocking hooks that gave them an anti-adhesive quality which repels ice. The researchers copied the feather's microstructure to develop a fiber membrane that resists ice buildup and could someday be used in a variety of applications such as outdoor electrical insulation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Coming up on International Edition, considering the effects of long-term space travel, and a new song from music and TV star Gwen Stefani. After an unprecedented 340 days in space, American astronaut and Expedition 46 commander Scott Kelly has returned to Earth aboard a Russian Soyuz space capsule, along with cosmonauts Mikhail Korneko and Sergei Volkov, in a parachute landing in Kazakhstan. They were lifted out of their space vehicle and carried to waiting chairs. The 52-year-old Kelly and 55-year-old Korneko arrived together aboard the orbiting International Space Station March 27th of last year, and traveled 230 million kilometers, flew more than 5,400 Earth orbits, and experienced nearly 11,000 sunrises and sunsets. Kelly has now logged the most days in space orbit of any American at 520. Space flight analyst Morris Jones, speaking from Sydney, Australia, says the space veterans have been subjected to a number of tests and experiments while in orbit, and will undergo further testing on Earth to determine the ability of men to withstand longer periods of weightlessness and exposure to radiation in preparation for a manned mission to Mars in 2030s.
They'll be taking blood samples. They'll be doing standard measurements that you go when you go for a medical checkup, like how are your reflexes, what is your blood pressure, what is the state of your body fluids and your immune system. There'll also be questions like what is the bone density, and they'll be taking probably samples of various body tissue, possibly to check for radiation damage. A lot of that will happen in the short term, but the main studies will also be long-term to see if the effect of being in space for so long has any long-term on the health of these two men.
What do we already know about what long-term space travel tends to do to the body?
This is hardly the first time that we've had a long-duration space mission, and a lot of the symptoms tend to be the same. The bones become more brittle, largely because they lose calcium. The immune system weakens a bit. The cardiovascular system changes because the heart doesn't have to fight gravity when it pumps blood around the body. In recent years, we've also discovered that the health of the eyeball tends to deteriorate because of the body fluid shifting around, and it could have some long-term effects on the optic nerve and possibly on the effect of the astronaut's vision. So bit by bit, as our medical tests become more sophisticated, we're getting a better understanding of not just so much the short term, but also the potential long-term effects on the body.
How long would a long-term mission to Mars take, coming and going?
Estimates for how long a trip to Mars would last are quite varied. I mean, at the upper end of the spectrum, some of the really whopper missions would take 3 years to make the round trip, and that would include 1 year on the surface of Mars. But we're talking about short-term trips of possibly between 6 months and a year, depending on how long you stay on Mars, and also depending on what sort of propulsion system you use. And one of the big problems that we're discovering with long-term spaceflight, and also with measuring conditions around Mars itself, is that radiation in deep space is likely to be the most serious problem. It's difficult to fight the radiation. You can do it with heavy shielding, but that adds to the weight of the spacecraft. And if the spacecraft gets heavier, then it takes longer to get there, which sort of defeats the purpose because you're in space for longer. And that exposes you to more radiation. So that's really one of the biggest problems that we'd face for a long-term mission to Mars.
Morris Jones says results of the extensive medical testing will be important, but will still fall short of conditions in deep space during a Mars mission, where radiation levels are much higher than in low Earth orbit, and the risk of other dangers like micrometeorites increases. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Celiac disease is an inheritable autoimmune disorder where the ingestion of gluten leads to damage in the small intestine. It affects 1 in 100 people worldwide. Gluten is a protein found in wheat, barley, and rye, and people who are allergic to it must always avoid it. But knowing what foods contain gluten is not always clear. And that's why Shireen Yates of Sensor Labs developed this $200 portable food tester.
You can actually hear the crunching as we put it through.
As Yates puts the pocket-sized tester to work, up comes a result, a frowny face icon indicating that this snack food does in fact contain gluten.
1 out of 5 of the gluten-free dishes that we're testing out in restaurants are coming back positive for gluten.
Peanuts pose another serious allergy threat to some people, and Yates' company is working on a portable tester for them as well. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Gwen Stefani has a new song out, and Larry London of Border Crossings tells me it's climbing the charts.
It is.
He's right here with me.
Absolutely, Susan. It's a song called Make Me Like You, which is a very interesting song title for a young lady who is in the midst of a personal crisis. She went through a divorce in the past year with her husband. They'd been married for about 13 years, have 3 children. And then she began a relationship with country singer Blake Shelton as a result of working on a TV show. They met on the TV show of The Voice as coaches on The Voice, and they started dating. Gwen has admitted she didn't know Blake before the TV show, and they fell in love. And her new album, which is coming out March 18th, and it's called This Is What the Truth Feels Like, was inspired by all of these personal events in her life in the last year.
Well, she certainly has a more complicated life than I do.
Absolutely. She's not only a very talented singer, songwriter, coach on The Voice, she's also an actress, and she's going to be appearing in a upcoming documentary about her life, which is called Through the Eyes of Faith, where she plays herself. And she's a fashion designer. She's got her own line of clothing and cosmetics called LAM, which are her favorite words, love, angel, music, baby.
Oh.
So there you go.
Well, tell me, is it make me like you, or is it make me like you?
It's like make
the same
you
as
like
you.
Whoever you want to like, whenever you want to like them. But this song was written for Blake Shelton. She recently admitted that. So it's kind of a reflection of really true events in her life, that she maybe was just kind of getting out of her long-term marriage, going through a lot of pain because of her ex-husband's infidelity. And so, she wasn't expecting to fall for Blake Shelton, but that's what this song is about.
Well, let's give it a listen.
I was fine before I met you. I was broken but fine. I was lost and uncertain, but my heart was mine. I was free before I met you. I was broken but free. All alone in a clear view, but now you are all I see. Hey, wait a minute. No, you can't do this to me. Scared.
Okay, that's Gwen Stefani with her song, Make Me Like You. And Larry, anything else you can tell us about this very, very busy woman?
Well, I'm sure that when her new album comes out, which is her 3rd solo album, This Is What the Truth Feels Like, Gwen will most likely be out on tour. Here's an interesting tidbit for you, Susan. She was, with her brother Eric, co-founders of a band called No Doubt, who've had many hits over the years. Gwen took a break. The band took a break. The band has since replaced Gwen Stefani. And she didn't know about it. She read about it, but they found another lead singer to replace her. And she's going about her business as a solo artist now.
Well, is she upset when they kind of left her on the side of the road?
You know, I don't know that it upset her. You know, I think that she, with her third solo album about to come out, has paved the way as a solo artist anyway. And the band recognizes that. They took a long break, a number of years. She wrote some new music. 2012, they released a comeback album, which didn't do very well. And so they're going to give it another try. And Gwen is pursuing her solo music, so they figured they can't wait. So they moved on.
Nothing like success to make yourself feel better about something.
Absolutely. Gwen Stefani is absolutely successful and absolutely gorgeous, too.
Okay. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Sue.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After a recent meeting with his National Security Council team, President Barack Obama said the only way to defeat ISIL in a way that lasts is to end the chaos and the civil war that has engulfed Syria for the last 5 years. The cessation of hostilities that was agreed to by Russia, the United States, and other members of the International Syria Support Group on February 22nd, and which went into effect February 27th, is a test, Mr. Obama said, of whether the parties involved are truly committed to negotiations. The process agreed to in Vienna is clear: a transition toward a more inclusive, representative government, a new government, a new constitution, followed by free elections. Acknowledging differences with Russia and Iran on the issue, President Obama reiterated his conviction that Syria's new future cannot include Bashar al-Assad.
It's clear that after years of his barbaric war against his own people, including torture and barrel bombs and sieges and starvation, many Syrians will never stop fighting until Assad is out of power. There's no alternative to a managed transition away from Assad. It's the only way to end the civil war and unite the Syrian people against terrorists.
President Obama said that a political settlement that would end the civil war means that all parties could then turn their attention to the crucial task of destroying ISIL.
And that's why the United States will do everything we can to maximize the chances of success in this cessation of hostilities. At the same time, I want to make totally clear that there will be absolutely no ceasefire with respect to ISIL. We remain relentless in going after them.
President Obama noted that the U.S.-led coalition with its local partners and allies is making headway in shrinking the core of ISIL in Syria and in Iraq. ISIL's control of territory has been diminished. Its leaders have been killed. Its flow of foreign fighters has been slowed. Its finances have been disrupted. The fight against ISIL will remain difficult, said President Obama, but we will continue to draw on all elements of our national power, military, intelligence, diplomacy, homeland security, law enforcement, and the strength of our communities. And I am confident that we will prevail.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.